UFO healing seen on many astral travels to Pleiadian mothership in the 90s. This following extracts regarding healing and similar is taken from a book made out of conscious, with full memory, of nightly astral journeys to alleged Pleiadian mothership, where she was educated and shown a lot of interesting things. Much of this is claimed to have taken place from ca. 1990 and forward. The book's name is The Mothership Chronicles, A Wider World of Hope and Joy, and author is Jane Egan, and book published in 2001. Intro. One night the author found herself aboard an enormous mothership. It was the size of a city. She had concentrated her thoughts during the astral travel that we all do at the edge of sleep. However, she was able to bring the memories of her travels back to Earth. The people she met on board the mothership were extraterrestrials of the Nordic type, tall, slender, mostly blonde, with blue or green eyes. They worked in various ways with those they called Earthlings. They helped those injured in the battles of Earth, such as the Gulf War, or in one case, a gas explosion in the heart of Mexico City. Those badly injured people were beamed aboard the mothership to be healed in an expeditious fashion, using technology not yet available on Earth. Jane made friends aboard the mothership, and one night she was invited to go aboard a flying saucer. They prefer to call it a scout craft. She was piloted out into space, and watched a ballet of scout craft performing to the music of the Nutcracker Suite. Later she spent time in a scout craft learning about their controls and then participated in a complex operation involving our solar system. Then she and other Earthlings were observers as diplomats from many galaxies gathered in this mothership to hear briefings about planet Earth. Life on a mothership can be very exciting. From Chapter 7, dot. After I saw the proof down in Earth space that the healing of the soldier I called Kentucky Boy was genuine, I approached the healing center with a renewed respect. The dedication to healing I could well understand. However, the ability to bend time and space in order to place him back where he would be found only hours later simply boggled my mind. Now that he was safely home again, I was allowed to wander into the ward where he had been. The other soldier who had been in the next bed, the Iraqi soldier, an enemy when on the battlefields of Iraq, was sitting on his bed, looking cheerful and almost well. I was curious about him, for he was chatting amiably with other soldiers like himself. When he noticed me, he grinned widely and waved. His fellow soldiers looked at me in great surprise. "Do you know yet when you are going back home?" I asked. "Oh no. I like this place, don't want to go back there. It's hot there and too many bombs going off and people telling you what to do, point a gun at somebody. I like it here better." "Yes, I can imagine," I chuckled. "Sit down here and stay with me," and he patted the edge of his bed. "No thanks, I have to go now," and I wandered among men who were in various stages of healing, from both sides of the Gulf War conflict down below. Here at least it was a peaceful place. The next evening when I arrived, the Iraqi soldier was waiting for me, all smiles and wanting me to sit with him. This time though, I had other things to do and turned away to walk down a hallway. He jumped out in front of me, grinning and begging me to stop. This was getting a bit thick, so I tried to duck around him. It didn't work. There he was, blocking my way, with a look of longing. "Just use your ability to move somewhere else. If you think hard about it, you can do it in the blink of an eye," I heard telepathically. So mentally I moved out onto the boulevard outside the healing center. I actually hadn't been out here for some time, so I took time for a stroll. People nodded and smiled as I passed. They all looked so familiar, but I was getting used to that. The next evening's visits were no better. The Iraqi soldier was always waiting for me, grinning in my face. My lack of interest in him didn't faze him at all. Instead, he seemed to consider my reluctance to be an interesting challenge. He followed me wherever I went, still looking at me with a sideways yearning glance. All this was getting a bit sticky. Others noticed and smiled, but I wasn't enjoying it at all. I was feeling penned in, always having to mentally jump somewhere else. I couldn't help but hope he would be returned to Earth soon. One evening, the woman whom I had first seen in the control room met me as I came up on my astral travel. I peeked around the corners of the healing center thing to see if my nemesis, the Iraqi soldier, was around. There he was at the end of the hallway, so I headed the other way. The lady whom I had met that first night fell in step beside me. "Why does that fellow always want to be following me?" I complained. She smiled, "Well, take a look at yourself in that mirror over there." My reflection shocked me. I appeared to be about 30 years old. Any evidence of aging seemed to have dropped away. Lines by my eyes were smoothed out. The extra flesh around my chin disappeared and my skin appeared as soft and unlined as a baby's skin. "What gives?" I asked. "Well, our gravity is much less up here, so there is nothing to pull your skin down. Then too, the atmosphere we have up here sustains us in ways your atmosphere down on Terra does not. In truth, we can decide to look like any age we want here in the mothership." She was chuckling at my newfound understanding. "Well, this is the first time that my youthening has gotten in my way aboard the mothership. I guess I'll have to shift gears and be more watchful, just like when I was 30 years old." From Chapter 11, Healing the Earth. In the midst of all my nighttime travels to the mothership, the days on Earth were not so peaceful. There was the tension-filled trial of the policeman accused of the beatings in Los Angeles. Once the verdict of not guilty was announced, murderous riots erupted in the City of the Angels. There were many of us who were filled with great sorrow at such happenings. We could not believe that such destruction could happen in this country of ours that had been founded on freedom for all. We watched in horror as the drama played itself out daily on our television screens. Then there were the eruptions of nature itself. Volcanoes in the Philippines threw out mud and stones. They sent many people into the streets running for their lives, holding umbrellas or any other protective they could find to hold over their heads. This happened not once but many times, and our sympathies went out to them. Months after this, I prayed and meditated on what I could do to heal the suffering of the people in faraway places. Well, if I could travel up to the mothership at night, surely I could also traverse the fields above the earth while out of my body. Perhaps I could give comfort or healing even from where my physical body was located. So saying, I settled myself in my bed in position for astral travel. In a moment I found myself high above the earth, and turned my face west towards Los Angeles. I had expected to see a great cloud of dull dark anger hanging over Los Angeles. My intent was to focus energy into such a cloud and begin to burn it away. As I approached, however, I was amazed to see thousands of tiny little lights, spiritual lights, all over Los Angeles, all burning brightly. These came from the homes of good and spiritual people who were praying that peace and goodwill would return to the city they loved so well. It looked like that city was in good hands, so I moved on to the Philippines. There is a difference between the gray pall of volcanic ash that is thrown up by nature itself and the gray cloud of fear or hate. Here too in the Philippines, the gray cloud of fear was lifting. There were hundreds and thousands of these same little spiritual lights, coming from the villages and also from the cities of the Philippines. There were the feelings of helpfulness, of neighbor helping neighbor to clear out the mess and to rebuild. There was even a sense of joyous laughter as people were learning to work together once again. There was no need of my efforts here, so I kept moving west. Now I was over the oil fields of the Persian Gulf that had been so recently set afire. The fires had now been put out, but black smoke hung everywhere. It drifted for hundreds of miles. It truly blighted the earth. Beneath it all, I heard the moans and cries of despair of the people who had once called this place their home. These cries described a living hell on earth. I went to work, focusing my laser sight onto the billowing clouds of smoke that were beginning to drift over all the earth. This cloud would soon poison the whole atmosphere unless it could be contained. I began working around the edges of the clouds, burning out the blackness. By intently focusing my energy of laser sight, I was able to vaporize much of the smoke. In my inner hearing, I heard it hissing as it was transmuted into the purer elements of the air from which it had come so many eons ago. I began working in ever smaller circles, attacking the dark clouds of poison. They boiled ominously but became smaller, smaller, until only the grayness was left. The air was purifying itself and would soon be fit for breathing again. Then I looked up and was horrified to see a great rent in the very fabric of the energy field of the Earth, the crystal energy system of the planet, also known as its energy grid. This tear had been created by the many bombs that had been dropped during the Persian Gulf War. The rent or tear in the Earth's energy field ran from northwest to southeast over what had been originally the fertile Mesopotamian Valley. This rent was now over the countries of Iraq, Libya, and Iran. What was worse was that the crack was slowly extending itself. It would eventually circle the entire Earth unless it was stopped. This grid is terribly important. It defines barometric pressure systems in the Earth and weather systems, major fracture zones and tectonic plates. It defines the migration routes of sea, land and air creatures, and points of magnetic anomalies, such as the Bermuda Triangle. It even defines cultural centers of mankind, both of the present and the past. Our Mother Earth was drastically in need of assistance. One of the skills my mother had taught me as a child was how to darn socks. She had explained how to spread the whole over a firm surface such as a darning egg. Then she told me to take loose looping stitches around the edges of the hole. Then take another row of stitches inside of the first row of stitches. Now, slowly and carefully, start bringing the hole together. I believe that this same technique should surely work even here. The only problem was that the hole was larger. My metaphysical studies in spiritual work had taught me that nothing was impossible. All you have to do is to focus thought strongly enough on it and you can bring it into existence. So, first I created a great golden needle with my mind. It may have been 3 feet long or 6 miles long, I really don't know. Then I threaded it with a great thread of golden light whose end was so long it disappeared over the edge of the Earth. Next I went up above this energy grid of the Earth and slowly I began to take long looping stitches with my golden needle and its thread of light. I worked all along the edges of the energy grid. I went round and round the hole with my golden needle and its long thread of golden light, strengthening the edges and bringing it back together ever so gently. Round and round I went. As I did so, the cries and moans that I had been hearing started to diminish. Suddenly I realized that these moans were actually coming from deep within the Earth itself. Mother Earth had been in deep pain from the huge scar that had been cut in her skin by the war in the Persian Gulf. She had been burning from the on-fires and smoke which had polluted the area afterwards. Our Lady was in dire pain. Next I began weaving back and forth across these loops of golden energy threads, carefully following the latitude and then the longitude lines of the Earth. I moved back to survey my efforts. It was working. Next I went above the latitude and longitude lines and began strengthening the great net of the crystal energy grid with the thread of golden light that came together over power points such as the Great Pyramid and Stonehenge. However, the rents at either end of this hole were still present, and they appeared quite unstable. I moved south and east and quickly whipped together the edges of the tear I had seen. The tear was right over the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. I brought the lips of the wound together. Great. The tear or rent was now staying together. It seemed very reasonable that if there had been a big rent in the southeast, there would also be something similar in the north. Sure enough, there was a tear in the fabric of the energy field there also. It extended up over Eastern Europe. I was able to quickly bring the edges of the frayed energy field together and sewed it back together with my golden needle and golden thread of light. Phew. Yet I could still hear moaning coming from the Earth. What now? I looked down to the east at the Caspian Sea that at the present time borders three countries, Turkmenistan, formerly part of Russia, Iran and Turkey. This is where the moans were coming from. From childhood, I have always felt a kinship, a love if you will, for that area by the Caspian Sea, particularly on the southeastern edge. This was in spite of the fact that I have never traveled there. Starting from the lower east side, I looked deep into the depths of that once beautiful sea. There was an awful blackness there in the bottom of the sea. It was so very depressing, particularly in the middle part of the lower curve of the sea, the southern end. I looked into its depths and was shocked at what I saw. There was a huge being living at the bottom of the sea, which was black and slimy looking. It didn't resemble Nessie, the Loch Ness monster, by any means. It was huge, maybe miles across, and was the very personification of evil. It was horrible. Naturally, its influence affected everyone who lived along the edges of the sea. Its dark energies filled everyone with depression and despair. It limited out the joy that anyone had tried to express and simply consumed it. Most of the residents along the sea had no idea that it was there or what it really was doing. Fishing had almost come to a standstill. The fish simply couldn't live in these waters. There was a great deal of 20th century pollution from oil wells and runoff from manufacturing from the northern end of the Caspian Sea. No one really understood what had happened. Older fishermen told of the days when the great Caspian Sea had been full of fish called sturgeon. There had been plenty and they had fed the people there. Their grandchildren found their stories hard to believe. All of this I knew in an instant. I focused my laser sight on the evil being beneath the waters. This is an ability to see into the more exotic energies of Earth. It is still somewhat unique on Earth, but this ability will come to many more people as time goes by. Still, I knew I was going to need some help. I called on Archangel Michael for assistance. In a moment I saw the famous Sword of Blue Flame beside me. "What do we do now?" Michael just stood there with shoulders shrugging. "Whatever you want," I heard. "Well, this big evil being at the bottom of the sea doesn't belong there. I want to get rid of him," I said. "I'm going to need your help to cut through all the evil, Michael." "Here we go," I thought. Michael was at my side as we dove into the sea. I could see the Sword of Blue Flame was slashing everywhere. "You, there in the bottom of the sea. Come out of there. You aren't supposed to be there. Leave and leave now," I commanded. I could feel a heavy sense of evil coming from the bottom of the sea. It fairly shook the land. "No. This is my home. This is where I have always lived. You can't make me leave here." It sounded ominous. I considered the whole situation for a minute. I knew that I was in my astral body, and because of that, I knew that nothing could hurt my physical body. Besides that, Archangel Michael was right beside me. So I pulled together all the mental and spiritual energy I could master. "You have no right to be there in the Caspian Sea. It is not your home. You came from somewhere else. Now leave." "I will not." And it dug its slimy tentacles into the bottom of the seabed. "Come on, we've got work to do, Michael." And mentally I dove deeper into the sea. Despite its blackness, I knew where the tentacles were attached. I began cutting them loose with laser energies coming from my eyes. Michael was right at my side doing the same thing. Soon every tentacle was cut loose. "By the power of Jesus the Christ, I command you to leave this beautiful sea. Leave and never come back. Never touch the seas anywhere on Earth again," I commanded in as thunderous a voice as I could master. The huge being shot up out of the water. It looked for all the world like an octopus shooting itself forward with its tentacles. There was a rumble of thunder. Then it disappeared above me. I went down to the bottom of the sea to check, and there was still another slimy being down there. It was hanging on tightly to the seabed. Then I focused on it, and with sharp cuts of the laser beam from my eyes, I made short work of the tentacles. I commanded it to leave also. I looked again, and there was still a third slimy black being hiding at the bottom of the sea. This one was by far the largest one of all. "Leave these waters, now," I commanded. "No, I won't," came back in an equally thunderous voice. "Yes, you will. By the authority of God, and in the name of Jesus the Christed One, I command you to leave this earth forever." There was all enormous whoosh, and it came out of the water shooting past me into unknown regions. The water was slowly retiring to its natural beautiful blue color. I went down beneath the surface one more time to see if there was any tentacles remaining that might regrow. I swept the area with the beam of my laser sight and cleaned up the bottom of the seabed of any of the remaining tentacles. When I came back up to the surface of the water, I heard what sounded like the voices of happy little children. The voices came from water breaking along the edges of the shore and turning into white foam. "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you," was coming out of all the bubbles along the shore. Now the sea was returning to its original beautiful blue that I had always associated with it. There were strings of pearls around the edge of the shore that were formed as the water broke into foam along the shore. This seemed to be a good night's work, so I went back home to my own bed. Immediately I fell into a deep and dreamless sleep. Later I learned that Adros had checked the visual documentary record up on the mothership of that night on their 3D TV. He saw what had happened. He confirmed that I had pulled the crystal magnetic grid back together and stabilized it. He had actually seen the black and evil beings depart from the Caspian Sea. I was informed that not only had I removed them from the sea, but that I had shot them completely out of Earth's atmosphere, never to return. Even Adros was impressed by what I had done. These beings had been installed by some evil A's who had their own agenda for the Earth. This was more than 50 years ago, and those dark and evil beings had been there ever since at the bottom of the sea. They were maintained by the pollution from manufacturing runoff and by the dregs from the unprocessing as well. A portion of this great inland sea had turned red from the sulfur generated by the unprocessing. As it dried, it became yellow, but was still poisonous. Now that these beings had been ejected from the sea, the people who lived beside the Caspian Sea could begin to regain the joy that was truly their birthright. Without sounding too much like preaching, I wanted to tell everyone this story of the Caspian Sea. It is now gradually starting to purify itself as fresh water flows into its northern end. Someday the sea will regain its former beauty. There was an article in the May 1999 issue of National Geographic magazine telling about the pollution that has gathered on its surface and on the seabed in the last 50 years. The discouragement of the people who live alongside it was apparent for all to see. However, it is very important that everyone reading this understand that there is much that they can do for people and places all over the world from wherever they are located. Miracles can be set in motion just by using concentrated thought and by prayer. It works. It really does. Chapter 14 Repairs to the Healing Facility. Life aboard the mothership was no longer so laid back. After the end of the war in the Persian Gulf, armed conflicts in the world of Earth down below had been escalating in many localities such as Bosnia or Africa. This created medical crises aboard ship almost constantly. I would hear, "There are more injured coming. Let's put them in one of the public areas for a while." The little doctor was almost never seen now. When I did see him, he was rushing here and there, checking on his injured chicks. He was very fortunate to have a great number of very capable medical assistants, who were all types of beings. They worked intensely on the casualties of the wars that were erupting like cancers all over the earth. There didn't seem to be a visible hierarchy of doctors with titles. Everyone seemed to have qualifications that were well known to all. In truth, the awfulness of the injuries to the poor humans brought aboard the ship demanded that any being that was able to help them just get right to work. The telepathic abilities of the beings aboard the mothership smoothed out procedures of handling the injured of humanity. The medical teams worked as easily as a set of complex gears, moving among the wounded, relieving pain and stopping the blood flow. Then the teams would gather to do the delicate job of repairing human tissue that was almost unrecognizable from their wounds. Whenever I was able to be there, I helped out in any way that I could. My help was accepted without formal credentials. It was often necessary to simply bring a sense of peace to those who had been wounded and let them know that they were in a place of safety. I did a lot of this kind of work. Many of them were civilians who lived in an area that had become a war zone. For the most part, they simply slept, for their bodies had been physically exhausted even before their injuries. Infections were no problem because the Pladian technology allowed them to transmute bacteria and viruses into something harmless. They simply zapped the infections with the appropriate frequency. This made the treatment facilities much simpler. Medical treatment could take place anywhere because infections could be absolutely control-led. This was a continuing source of amazement to me. I would see horribly injured people lined up right beside each other. The medical personnel moved from one to the other, reattaching severed arms and legs to their bodies and calming the hysterical minds of the traumatized humans who lived inside these mangled bodies. This hysteria sometimes posed the greatest problem of all. One evening I had been working with the medical teams taking out shrapnel from deep wounds. Long ago I had to set aside my antipathy for blood, because the medical teams could control bleeding so very well. We were setting up some of the injured personnel in rooms to be monitored by special equipment, when one man at the end of the room began screaming at the top of his lungs. Attendants tried to calm him, but it wasn't working very well. He sat up, whirled around, and jumped off the bed despite the fact that he had many wires and tubes attached. Wires going to the wall to the monitors broke, as well as the tubes bringing him medications. He was completely unaware that he had broken the tubes and the wires from the monitors and that they were still attached. He looked around wildly and spotted the door. In a flash he was gone, bandages, tubes, wires and all. His attendants immediately gave chase. I felt sorry for both the injured man and his would-be rescuers. I heard a groan coming from someone standing nearby. It was one of the small workers who made repairs in the healing center. Another repair job to that wall. We just got that station fixed. Soon a crew of three small technicians about the size of Zeta Reticulans appeared, with tools and wires to begin repairs. It looked to be an impossible task. I moved closer to watch. Some of the wires were frayed at the wall. Other wires were completely missing. The only thing visible was a hole in the wall. I watched them work. I was fascinated as a wall panel was removed to reveal the wiring behind it. The panel was about 2 feet in diameter. The repair crew took a look at the damage. It looked like a bad case of silver-colored spaghetti inside the opening. This is a bad one. It looks like someone may have to crawl in after some of the wires. They turned to the smallest member of the crew. You're going to have quite a job on your hands a little later. They all set to work, small long fingers working nimbly to cut out the faulty wiring and replace it. I was impressed to see how efficiently they worked. Here in the confined quarters just inside the wall, their small size was a definite asset. They could reach their slender arms into places that would have been unreachable to me, so that they could repair the wires. After a while they stepped back. It's your turn now, and the smallest member of the crew, barely 3 feet tall, picked up some tools and moved over to the opening. He began a slow crawl into the wall. In a moment the only thing that could be seen were his tiny feet. Do you have to do this very often? I asked. More often than we like. It's usually one of the hysterical types who breaks away like you just saw that causes all this mess. But we can fix it, we can fix anything, he said proudly. Very gently I said, I'm sorry that something like this has to happen. I realize that all of the beings who live on this mothership know of the goodwill of the medical personnel who work here, and they understand that they will get well in record time. The reaction of my fellow Earthlings was embarrassing, but I was trying to explain the reasons. It is too bad, but those people you bring up here from Earth space who are terribly injured from the wars down in Earth space, don't understand what a great healing facility that this is here. This room is very strange, unlike anything they have ever seen, and the appearance of some of you is very strange to them as well. They are already hysterical from their injuries, so the strangeness here only adds to their problems. The small crew chief turned his great luminous eyes on me with great interest. I swallowed hard but continued, in a war zone on Earth, people learn quickly that almost no one can be trusted. For this reason sometimes it isn't possible to calm them down so they can be worked on. Up here in the mothership you are not used to working in a situation where things can go wrong so easily. I waited to see the effect my words would have on them. The members of the repair team nodded thoughtfully, so I continued. I do believe though that there is a way to avoid having to do all these repairs all over again. Every time a hysterical patient runs off down the hall with the tubes and wires to his equipment still attached. That would be nice. Do you have some ideas? The small team leader said. Yes, I do. When you bring the tubes and wires out of the wall, make a breakaway connection that will separate easily that goes to each wire and each tube. Then if a patient becomes hysterical and jerks away out of control of the attendants, there will only be a short length of tubes and wires that you lose when they are running down the hall. I know that all of the staff here has the very best intentions for their welfare, but the minds of the injured people may be so confused that they ruin from the very help they really need. If you have breakaway connections to the wires that simply pop open when they become hysterical and jump off the table or bed, Then you won't have a major repair job for the wiring after each incident. The whole crew had stopped to listen, and nodded in agreement.